Welcome to the February 22nd, 2023 regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and or presentations at the time of your request. This is a preliminary agenda and subject to change. I'd like to call the meeting to order at 6:34, and can we all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. There's a delay in the.
It's like we had a round going.
Yeah.
We were singing in a round.
Very Jacques.
Very Jacques.
So have both of you had a chance to look over the agenda? I'd entertain a motion.
I move we accept the agenda as presented.
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
As there is no public present, I'm going to skip over public comment and move right on to number five, the consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item may be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. This is A through G, and they are approval of January 24th, 2023 work session meeting minutes, approval of January 25th, 2023 regular meeting minutes, approval of January 23rd, 2023 work session meeting minutes, approval of February 7th, 2023 work session meeting minutes, approval of February 14th, 2023 work session meeting minutes, approval of February 21st, 2023 work session meeting minutes, and approval of the January 2023 warrants and EFT payments. I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Moving on to action items. Memo to commission, sick leave accrual. Greg, you have something to say about that?
Yeah. So we had discussed adjusting the sick leave accrual and also adjusting PTO carryover to 200 hours. And that this is going to get memorialized in the employee handbook, but we wanted to get a memo to you since we had already discussed it in December of last year that we basically had commission approval to move forward on this. But since we don't have all the edits to the employee handbook, we're gonna actually have the employee handbook completed. But we wanted these two things. To inform the commission that, you know, by memo, I've actually approved these things.
Yeah, back. They're the major changes.
As of January 1st.
Memorializing.
Because it needs to show in everybody's compensation.
Yeah.
And payroll.
Yep, gotcha.
So the two things were to include increase of sick accrual to 3 weeks per year, and then increase PTO carryover to 200 hours to the next year.
Right.
Which is an increase from 160. So a lot of organizations actually allow you to accrue 240 hours or more,
right,
and carry that over. The reason why we're going to try this out for this year, but the reason why that we were maybe more conservative of only going to 200 hours is because we only have 11 staff, and we're just worried. It's hard to say no to someone to take a vacation, and then we may not have coverage for 11 people. So that way, if you have 200 hours, you know, you're looking at 5 weeks of vacation that they can carry over from the previous year. Plus, they're accruing through the year.
Yeah.
So the concern was, well, we could end up in a bind of having adequate staff to, or someone, you know, so we're just limiting it 200. there's arguments.
Yeah. And it's kind of, it's one of those things where, you know, we want to make sure that the staff have enough time to for life, right? Yeah. Life happens all the time.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is we want to make sure that we don't have, like if someone does leave, we don't have to pay out a huge amount. You'll see mm-hmm. in some of my discussion on the financials with the compensation that when we have to, you know, pay someone out, it could be pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that used to be one of the things we did was pay out vacation. We don't do that anymore, or we do that still. But for whatever reason, they got a lot accrued. So.
Oh, right.
Prior to now.
But
yeah.
Encouraging, you know, encouraging people to actually take time off.
Yeah, because we really want them to.
Use that.
We want them to
not
do
be
that.
Able to bank so much.
Yeah. Right.
That is important. Yeah.
It's one of those things you got to be careful with. You know, I had a discussion with Joe, and he was funny. He said, "Well," and I said, "You have so much vacation. Why don't you use it?" "Well, who would do my job when I'm gone?" And I said, "Well, you know, the grass could grow a little bit. You know, it's okay." Yeah. And you know,
I don't
he was
know the
just
hostas,
really
though. The hostas on the side there.
Yeah. So I think it's a good thing to have that for people. Yeah.
There's instances with people where, you know, when you have if you happen to have kids that you're caring for, but in some instances it doesn't qualify for the ability to use sick accrual because they're not a dependent
mm-hmm.
or they're not a family, but you end up in a situation where you have to care for someone and mm-hmm. then that ends up having to
yep.
go and burn your PTO
yep.
to fulfill, you know,
yeah.
your other duties. It doesn't fall into a simple bucket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we just felt like, well, if people save their PTO up, and I, you know, I'm kind of regretting maybe we should have gone to 240 yeah. just because we have so many people that are helping care for non-dependent
mm-hmm.
but people within the family.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then you need that bank in order to be able to care for them, draw from, without going into unpaid leave too.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, so. You all are allowing people to donate sick leave, which
yes.
a lot of times and employers will only allow the annual leave or the vacation pay.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's something you get paid when you leave. So it was kind of, a lot of people wouldn't do it. But mm-hmm. in our case, you know, if you could have 1,000 hours saved up and be able to, you know, save someone's life, maybe, or whatever,
so you
that's
allow
a good thing.
Other employees to contribute to somebody's.
Contribute to that. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that right there will kind of help some of those people that have to fill the gap. I mean, I ran into it in my life, and I didn't think I'd have to that early mm-hmm. with my mom, so. It was nice to be able to have the sick leave.
Yeah, so
that's an adjustment, but it yep. needed to actually be put into place. So
yeah,
but I want to be
too
sure
far into the year before we're
right
retroing back.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is an action item, correct?
Trying to make it happen now.
I should do a motion.
Yes, we would like commission to actually approve this.
Do you need a motion?
Yes, to approve the sick
leave.
Leave accrual.
I move that we approve that change to the employee handbook.
And I'll second that.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Nope. Aye.
Aye.
And now we move on to action item B, which is memo to commission exempt employee time card reporting.
Would you like to address
sure,
this?
Sure. So this is something that we found through L&I. And we actually, at the credit union, I'm very familiar with this because we never had to fill out a time card if we were exempt unless it had to do with vacation or sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those employees that are exempt at the port, it's very easy to make sure that we track that and have it without having to have a lot of additional hours on there. For example, you know, when we key the items into L&I, and if somebody is there for long periods of time, it does open us up a little bit to, mm-hmm. you know, to problems. But what we do is encourage people to work their shift and go, right?
Yeah.
Gone are the days where you have to stay really late, or because, you know, we have a good staff. We have enough people to pick up the slack. So, but this is a very easy way. It's easier for us reporting-wise, and it's also something that saves time and is just, it's something that the DOR recommends doing if you're exempt. So we decided that, you know, we put it in front of you and that you approve it.
How many exempt employees are there at this time?
There is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Wow. Wow.
Is that right? 6.
There's 4 of us upstairs. Rain.
6.
And rain.
6.
Right. That's 6. Right.
Good thing I'm the accountant.
The numbers down.
Right. You got me. You got me, girl.
So those are all salaried employees, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Everyone else is hourly.
It's not something we don't normally get involved in.
Yeah. And anytime you have questions, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So
absolutely.
Part of it is this is carryover from payroll practices that we had for years that we just keep cleaning up as they go through it thoroughly. And to Audra and Stacy's credit, you know, they went over everything and audited for the past 3 years in preparation for the SAO 3-year audit, all payroll. And you can see these anomalies and things that just aren't normal business practice and Department of Revenue. Then they came in and audited us at that one time. And so, and then when they conferred with SAO and other people, like, this isn't normal.
Yeah.
I've never done it as a salaried employee in my career, other than to declare your PTO and sick. So I thought it was a little bit odd, but it was business practice, but we like to
change
it.
Yeah, because you don't normally do that as a salaried employee.
No, you don't. But it's something that, you know, just has been kind of one of those relics.
Okay.
It's a relic.
Yeah.
Good to know.
And it's good that there's the memo that... from Stacy, referenced in here too. I think that background.
She has all
helps.
The backup data.
It really helps a lot.
Oh, she has everything.
Yeah.
You know that.
I know.
The auditor, she has all that.
Well, I think what I'll go ahead and make a motion to approve the workers' compensation insurance reportable hours and time cards for salary exempt employees.
Thank you.
I second that motion.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We'll move on to discussion items. I don't see any listed there. Are there none? Okay. So we'll move on to financial report.
You want to discuss that one thing or not? The idea that...
We could also discuss in staff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It probably is a discussion item.
Yeah, I think it might be.
We didn't add it to the agenda, though.
No, we didn't add it to the agenda.
Okay, we can do
so
it.
So we should probably wait.
We'll talk about it in the other part.
Right. It's not requiring any action. It's just that we could have it. It's like a discussion.
Well, now it piqued my curiosity.
Yes. I know. We must.
I'm trying to be official here. I don't
Are
want to
you
redo
the president,
the agenda.
Mary? Oh, I'm just teasing.
We can wait for that till
okay.
The reports
further
and stuff.
Discussion.
Yeah,
just for a discussion.
Okay.
All right.
No clue, but let's
Mary,
move on.
Let's
go on.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I don't know if I'm cutting in and out when I talk.
No.
We can hear you just fine.
You guys are all cutting in and out.
Oh, we are?
Oh, no.
Oh,
yeah, totally. But by concentrating, I can follow what you're saying.
Okay.
That's good.
Good.
It could have something to do with the weather.
Yeah, I'm not looking for it. I might be staying at your house, Mary. Or your house. Whatever's closest.
We're going to do the audit update.
Yes. So, as you know, we had the state auditors come and visit us in 2022 and 2023, and they did 3 years of the audit. And so I just kind of wanted to, now all of the audit reports are posted on our website, because I wanted to make it open to the public, as well as the 3 last year annual reports for 2019, 2020, and 2021. And so to just kind of give you a high level, I know, Steve, you heard all of this, but I just kind of wanted to give them a high level. So there were two audits that they did. One was for accountability, and the other one was for financial statements. And on the accountability, one thing that they marked us on, but let me preface it by saying we have no findings. Woo! That's a huge thing. No findings is really good. That's excellent. So I was very happy to hear that. So for the annual report filing, and I'm sure this isn't a surprise, you know, we have a lot of turnover and a lot of things going on. So the 2019 annual report was filed 526 days late. The 2020 annual report was 276 days late, and then the 2021 annual report was filed on time. So it was kind of one of those things where I came in, I knew that had to be done, and thank you for my great team and support. You know, we were able to do it. So as soon as I submitted 2021, I got a call from our audit manager, and she was like, Porta Kingston! I'm so happy, you know. And so, but it was a very good experience. I've been through a lot of audits in my career, and financial institution audits are really not fun. But this one was a little bit, and we also learned so much because we had a very tenured auditor. She had been with the state auditor's office for 35 years.
Right.
And so it was nice to have her experience as well as who she knows that can tell us, because we had a lot of questions for her, more than she said normally. Usually people want auditors out of there, but I know that they could be your friend too. So anyway, so it was a really good experience, and you know, I'm looking forward to the next one actually. So the second thing on the accountability audit, so the first was the annual report.
Did she just say she's looking forward to the next one?
Yeah, annual report. Right with me. I do, it's weird. And then the second thing was procurement.
What's that?
Yeah, not
so. I like auditors, actually. They help keep you, you know.
This auditor was a phenomenal.
Wasn't she phenomenal?
Phenomenal person.
She was, and it was funny because when Stacy and I were talking to her, she goes, you know, usually people don't get along with me very well. And I thought, really? Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, I'm really direct. You know, I tell it like it is. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I appreciate that. She goes, well, you tell it like it is, too. And I said, I don't think I'm like that.
You do.
I know. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that I kind of am like that.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, she was, what I appreciated was her going over things that she didn't necessarily have to because they weren't findings or anything.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know. Or Stacy wanted to know.
Mm-hmm. So the reason that my understanding is the reason that those things were late was because you guys were going through everything, every detail.
Correct.
Trying to make sure that everything was correct moving forward. There was a reason why that happened.
Yes. And some of it kind of falls on, so we had contracted with Hearthstone.
Yeah.
CPA firm.
Yep.
And one of the first things I did after coming on board was contacting her and saying, okay, so we need to take care of this. And so she helped me through 2019. And then Greg had already done 3 or 4 write-ups, I think, for 2019. And so I kind of got those together and we sent it off. And then same thing with 2020. Mm-hmm. But then we realized after we submitted everything that it wasn't quite right. So mm-hmm. we decided, Stacy and I decided to take it upon ourselves to just redo everything. So we redid 2019, 2021, so that it was correct and we could say that, yes, it's good, you know, everything's clear. Mm-hmm. But I think it was just because, for one, the accountant at Hearthstone was not super, like, social.
Yeah.
If that's okay to say, she was professional and stuff, but you really had to work with her a certain way. And then we also had, looky loose in here. But we also had, staff that didn't really know, you know, and nothing against them. They just didn't really know how to answer some of the questions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we met with April, it was a really refreshing great conversation.
Yeah.
And we hammered a lot of things out, so I feel really confident moving forward. And 2022 year end was phenomenal. Did you have a question, Mary?
No, I just
thought. Oh, okay. All right. So the other piece of the accountability was procurement. So procurement is one of those things that the auditors want to make sure there's plenty of internal controls and you're doing everything you need to do, and that's for purchasing, for contracts, for anything that you are, whether it be services or products or anything, there has to be a process in place. And I found out government is really, really on top of it.
Strict.
It was very different from the procurement I had before. So basically, and it's not a huge thing. I think Greg and Mark work really well together, and most of the things that they have here as a, you know, recommendation is because it just needs to be more documented, better documented, because it was kind of like, we didn't really document everything perfectly, but the practices were there, and they knew that. So that's why they didn't show this finding.
So did she give recommendations for how to document that
she
going
did.
Forward?
She did, and actually, you know, after talking with Chris and Greg and Mark and Tori, we have a plan for how we're going to move forward with getting those procedures in place, who does what, those kind of things, because...
Awesome.
Yeah, there was only one contract that was awarded through the Small Works roster that wasn't made public, and they never told me the name of that, so I still don't know to this day. And ensure contractors pay prevailing wage for public works projects. That was another thing that we have to make sure we do. And like I said, you know, it's all there. It's just trying to find it and get it all together. Yeah.
Okay.
But not bad at all.
Well, got the plan in place.
Yep. And then on payroll, there was just a couple of things. We did not put into procedure or policy how we are going to pay out incentive bonuses. And this all goes back to your strategic plan and setting your KPIs, your key performance indicators, and making sure that... The goals that staff have are measurable and you can tie a bonus to it rather than just, you know, giving a bonus.
Right.
And this is not uncommon for a lot of employers because a lot of people were giving signing bonuses and that kind of thing without really thinking about it. So
basically they said you have to perform before you get the bonus, right? There has
yes.
to be there
right.
has to be after the fact.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
So that's why you need to set either a goal or something as a finish line
of, with the
before
finish
you
line,
get
yeah.
payment.
Yeah,
right,
it's like
right.
yeah, you have to show what you did outside of your job or really well or something like that. So we are we're developing those. I think informally, more so than formally. But we will have to do that in order to pay those out. So we didn't get docked for it, but she just said, eventually, I'm sure you'll want to do that. So she put it down as a recommendation to do that. So we are actively going through and reorganizing all of our electronic files to be able to make sure this is on, you know, available. And then the only other thing was... we paid multiple meetings for one day on a commissioner's timesheet, just one. Usually I look at those, so that's my fault that I didn't do that.
Oh, I see.
Because usually I do.
Yeah,
and usually I look at every time card.
Right,
so.
Yeah, because if we have two events in one day,
it's hard to put them on one line.
You can't put them on one line, really.
Yeah.
I try to sometimes, but it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
Oh, because you can't put the hours. It's really weird how it works.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you might have a regular meeting and then a off whatever meeting.
Sure.
Right.
They're still meetings, but you only get paid for the one thing.
Right.
So would it help? Is there anything that we can do to make that better? Because, you know, that's partly on us. What's the procedure for us in doing that? Are we supposed to put them on separate lines?
Well, normally you do. Okay. And I don't think in the case that is documented that that was any error on your part.
Right, yeah.
I think it was just us counting them up.
Oh, it's
without looking at the dates. Yeah,
without looking at the dates. Because usually you guys have the same date, and then you'll have maybe two or three meetings. But occasionally, you know, it'll be listed a couple times. That's something we should catch, not something you would need to worry about. So it had to do
with that. I try not to double up on those.
Yeah. We try to catch everything, but we're all human, right?
So
It's okay. And we will have incentive, bonus, and performance goals set up before we pay out those types of bonuses. So that's the thing. The bonus is also part of it. So the type of bonus, there's merit increases.
Right.
There's incentive bonuses.
Yes.
Right? And then, so the two are very different, and the way we report them to the PERS or DRS is different. So
we've created a form.
Yes, you
so
did.
So that we can track those things now and put it in the file and save it electronically. So for audit purposes, we'll see what was that for, when was it given, everybody signed off on it, and it's in their file.
So, very cool.
Yeah, cool.
Yay.
Yeah.
We're getting organized.
That's great.
I'm sorry. I'll make this quick because I'm taking too much time. Should be going like this.
No. Where's the hook?
I was just going to say that.
I just want to.
It's been a 3 year.
It was a three year audit.
That was huge.
Yeah, that was a lot of work.
We celebrated. I was so happy it was done. So then the other thing we were audited on was financial reporting. And so there were some errors in this. I'm not going to make excuses for it. We did follow just prior stuff we saw because we didn't have the whole picture. So that's why we asked if we could redo those prior years. We didn't think we'd have time to do it, but we thought, we're going to do it. So everything has been fixed as far as what is noted in the financial reporting. It shows these large variances in the net position, but that's simply because we did not take the capital assets and net out the debt.
Oh, yeah.
That was, and that was our mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something we didn't know about that we were supposed to do because we wondered why, there should be something that matches, you know. Everything that went wrong we did talk about, but that particular thing didn't get.
Very cool.
There are specific rules for public accounting that isn't necessarily intuitive.
Yeah.
And SAO wants you to follow their procedure exactly how they want it, and you have to report your financials how they want them.
Yeah.
Right.
You can then change it, but it has to be. But you have to report those and post those on your website exactly how they want it. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Mary, you had a question.
Yeah. Does it ever happen that you go through an audit and they don't have some not necessarily formal findings, but suggestions?
No. They will find suggestions,
never.
Mary. I've talked to several DFI, NCUA, the financial statement auditors. Yes, they because no one's perfect, so they will dig until they find something. And, you know, then there's times where in our case, I think they were a little bit more lenient because they knew that, okay, it was a big switch from cash to GAAP accounting in 2019. And so the staff that were there to handle that conversion didn't understand necessarily all the entries that it involved. And it is a big change. It's huge. And so I understand that, and there's no fault on anyone else for that, but, you know, that is what it is. But, yes, yeah. Mary, they will find something no matter what. Otherwise, they don't leave.
Oh, yeah.
I think
they got to get paid for something.
Yeah. I think it's important to note that April Taylor, the CPA for SAO, for the State Audit Office, she's actually, you know, with all her experience, she's actually expert on converting from cash to accrual and accrual back to cash.
Wow.
where there's a whole level of complexity there, actually, that, you know, you would think it's just a clean break to me, and then you start, it's not, that doesn't work that way. No. So it always has to bridge back over. Mm-hmm. So she was able to do all that. But she could see when they ran us through the algorithms that we looked really, really good.
Yeah.
But we also acknowledged and understood from the financial performance that we're not where we need to be. Mm-hmm. Which is that's a new component to SAO's audit, is this financial performance part.
Stability, like how long, you know, can you sustain? And it was a really good conversation. And one thing that she actually gave us kudos for was the cash flow model that mm-hmm, we have, mm-hmm. which Stacy is updating now for the new budget.
Yeah.
Because that really helps us. And there's reports that you all will be seeing soon. Line of business reporting, that's, we've solidified it, and we need to go through it with Greg and make sure he doesn't have any adjustments, and then with all of you to say, okay, does it make sense the way we have it? Because line of business reporting is very different. We're doing it manually, but we can do it because we're a small court, mm-hmm. And what it does is it takes all of the assets. We've even moved every asset to the correct line of business. We went through all of the asset list and determined, okay, what's a park? What goes to parks? What goes to parking? What goes to, you know? So that's kind of the way we've designed our financials, which you'll see, and probably already did see. Mm-hmm. This is the new layout that we're gonna be doing. It's what we do is we take it and put it into Excel, so it's easier to read. And then we don't include all of the detail because sometimes you can get lost in the minutia, you know, of things. And so this leads right perfectly into the financials.
So we're going on to B now, correct?
Yes, so the audit was good. I was really happy with it. And there's nothing that we haven't fixed that we planned on fixing. So.
Well, I felt they were very complimentary as well.
Yeah, they were.
Of the work.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're very nice. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I learn the most from those types of audits. Even if they have to dig, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. dig away. You know, I want to learn about it. And she did take the time. We've got a lot of good resources to call now for future questions we mm-hmm. have.
Yep.
And we also learned that anytime you put a help desk request in SAO, it shows up. So put that help desk request in and ask that question, and you know, it kind of helps in the audit to know that you really did check everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was really happy with it.
Cool.
And then I promised last month that I would have the December year-end financials. Along with January's, which I'm not going to follow too close, the January ones, because 1 month doesn't tell you a whole lot. And I think in our industry especially, quarterly is going to be, you know, the best way to track how we're doing, mm-hmm. because we're very seasonal. But there's, so to go over the new pack you have, you'll see that you have a balance sheet for December 31st, and this one is actually, what I'm looking at is year over year. Do you guys have that?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
So this is very telling for me because it allows me to, you know, to look at it and say, okay, what were these changes? Was there some anomaly, or is it just that we're, you know? But with the balance sheet, you can't tell a whole lot. One thing I will say on the balance sheet I look at a lot is cash and cash equivalents. And I actually have a graph that I was going to give all of you a copy of.
Mary has a question.
Yes, Mary?
Yes, could you repeat that? You said one thing I will say is, and then I
Well, let me think of what it was.
She tracks cash
so
and cash equivalents. That's one thing in the balance sheet.
Oh.
Oh.
Cash and cash equivalents. And the reason for that is because, you know, we want to make sure when we are in accrual accounting, meaning that we will write entries, journal entries in our accounting system to make sure that all of the expenses are accounted for in the month they were incurred, and same with revenue. So, but that doesn't necessarily affect cash. So what I like to do is, look at the cash very closely, and that's why the cash flow model will be really helpful for us. And also, so all you know, what do we have? What do we have to work with? I will say honestly that I think we need to build up our reserves a bit. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be important for us to define. Wow. What's that? Looks like you're scratching your head a lot.
Wow.
It's over now.
Okay.
Whatever it was, it looked good.
Yeah, right? It was good.
That could have been on TikTok or something.
Seriously, it looks like you were planning it.
It looks like a tan.
Got a little technology.
So what the line of business reporting will help us with, and that's kind of what all of these new reports are centered around, mm-hmm. is you have your balance sheet, and I know it's important to look year over year because you want to see, okay, how are we doing? We also have trend graphs that I think would be a great thing to share in a weekly session. If I was like on an appointment for like half an hour or something a month or whatever, or after you're done with the comp plan, is to really get you more engaged with some of the mm-hmm. reporting now that we have it, because it's very powerful and it really will help you make better decisions. Mm-hmm. I'm making you fall asleep.
Sorry, I'm just some heartburn going on.
It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
So
I did want to just go over a couple of things. So one thing we did for the balance sheet was you can see that it's in a simpler format. The capital assets that start around the middle of the page on the balance sheet for the period ending December 31st, 2022.
Okay.
All the assets were put in buckets as line of business. So what we did was our first phase of cleaning up the capital assets was to get rid of anything under $5,000 that didn't meet the threshold that wasn't really a fixed asset. I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't like it was a tangible thing that should have been ever on the fixed asset list.
Yeah.
They tracked everything.
It shouldn't have been capitalized.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been capitalized. So it was a kind of a two-phase approach. The first one was to remove those that didn't need to, and that's when you saw a loss in our gain loss on assets of $68,000 back in June.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first phase. And then the second phase was where we took the assets, looked at them, and consolidated those that made sense to consolidate. Because, for example, if you have a project you're working on and you might pay out 5 invoices every month, what really should be happening is all of those expenses should be in a holding pot until that asset or that project is complete. Mm. Then you book it.
Mm.
And so... as one asset, a building improvement or something. Otherwise, you have all these small little assets running out
Right.
So we only did that to the ones that made sense, and that we could actually make sure that this it's in line. And we combined those together. Once we did that, we moved all of the assets into what we would call the correct class.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that it's not only in the right bars class for the state auditors, but mm-hmm. it's also in a line of business class that we can now, moving forward, really truly measure our line of business. So it was a really good process for us to go through. And we also have the construction in progress, which we did... So for 2022, we did book new assets of almost $160,000. It included two projects. One was a fishing pier for the non-slip access. Mm. We had some issues with people slipping on there, so Tori and his group found a very good alternative, came in under budget, and we booked that asset. And then we had Project 45, which is the float R&R float leveling. So that was another one that was booked. And then mm-hmm. we added to our construction in progress because now what we're doing is we're working with Mark and Greg and Tori to go over all the projects and say, you know, where are we at this point in time? Because you want to make sure that any expenses for the current year are accounted for in that year. And that's where we came up with additional booked funds of $72,432. So now at the end of 2022, we have about $92,000 in our construction in progress.
Oh, yeah.
So those are just projects that will continue to move on, and we will book them when it's appropriate. We also had a couple of things that you'll see in the P&L side where something was put on fixed assets that was something that shouldn't be capitalized, but wasn't caught the first time because of the price point. So those were expensed and moved into whatever the appropriate category was. Mm-hmm. And consulting was the main one.
Yeah. Oh, okay. There was no line for it, essentially, or...
Well, they can't capitalize something should be capitalized.
Yeah, there was some dredging done, and normally, you know, that could be a project, you know, for whatever, but because that was an isolated incident and we didn't have the correct information around it, they capitalized it, but that's not really the case. You can't really, you can capitalize consulting as long as it leads up to a finished product, you know, like
right.
what Mark's doing or what the...
architecture,
the restroom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
All that can be capitalized.
Cool.
And then, so does anybody have any questions over the balance sheet at this point? A lot of the items you'll see are things that will not change. They're there because of the SAO audit and the way they like to see things laid out.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is we combined all the equity, and we used to have a whole bunch of grants that would just be sitting there and that kind of thing. We combined all those because really they only need to be set aside for 1 year. And we broke it out into restricted for net pension asset. And this is something that you'll see really will impact our P&L every year at year end, because that's what made the compensation and wages go up so much.
Mm-hmm.
Was there was a huge entry to the pension.
Pensions, yeah.
And that was a requirement, that's really an SAO requirement.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two things that they kind of seemed like they switched up, and it just is what it is. You just make the, you don't argue it, you just accept it and you make the adjustment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it was pretty substantial. So if you're really tracking this, then it would have been obvious to you. Like if we had the reporting done for years, you'd see, that's an anomaly right there. But it's pretty obvious to point it out if we were tracking on all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing we did on the equity section was we have committed. That is the capital projects fund that all of you wrote into resolution that we transfer money to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that continues to grow for us. So that's the balance sheet. And with that, I can't give it to Mary because I can't hand it to you over that, but I'll have Chris give it to you. But these are also balance sheet kind of items. And what this does is it shows the change we made. Of course, what would have been more helpful is a before and after, right?
So pretty.
Oh, right, yeah.
For but it is what it is.
Can you email that to me at some point tomorrow?
Yes. Yeah, we'll send it to you, for sure. So this kind of shows how the capital assets are classified into specific.
Year over year.
I like this one better.
Oh, what are they looking at?
Steve flipped his over. He likes
Steve,
the other side better.
Ahead.
He's moving ahead.
Okay, that's fine. But anyway, the capital assets, so this is how it's changed. Before and after would have been more appropriate. But, and then if you flip it over on the next page, it shows the cash reserves, the LTGO bond, which is our debt, and the net cash reserves. And so this is just something I kind of think I told you a couple of months ago, but it's nice to kind of see it in a graph, is that as you can see in 2018, we're underwater. You know, no net reserves at all.
It's really hard to see that.
Yeah.
We'll send that to you tomorrow.
And, you know, we've slowly been moving up, but we definitely need something else to, in my opinion, kind of get some more cash in. Mm-hmm.
I think the blue line,
a good story.
You just track that blue line for 5 years. And we know this. You guys know this from 831 5 years ago that we, in 2018, that was our reserve level. Now we're at 2.458 or 2.5 almost. Mm-hmm. And we've paid down on our bond from 937,000. Our bond is just at 700.
Uh-huh. That's great.
So there's 237,000 we paid down on, and we built our cash reserves from 800 to 2.5. And I had said that I'd hoped to hit 3 million, and you know, 2.8
million. But this is
million,
a huge.
It's a huge.
Huge. It's especially seeing it in this form.
In this graph.
It really shows that.
I agree.
Some big decisions had to be made.
Kind of an upward trend as well.
Yes, it's still upward trending.
I think substantiates growth. You know.
Yeah, but I will say
the right direction.
I will say that it does substantiate growth. It also has to do probably with our rate increases and things like that. I still will go back to the fact that we do need to grow. We do need to find some other revenue streams, there, by no means is this bad news. This is a great graph to look at.
I don't care what he says about you. I think you're okay.
Who are you talking to?
No, it's by no means it's not bad news or something. It's actually good news, but we do need to do better. And that cash flow model tells us that we need to figure out how we're going to fund replacement of assets.
Yeah. And this is what allows us to ask those questions.
This is
great.
Exactly.
It's okay.
Figure out where the challenges and the strengths and weaknesses are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'll hurry along because I'm sick of hearing myself. but he gave me three things to talk about. Shouldn't have done that. So I did want to say too that on the P&L you may see a little bit more in not over budget, but you'll see more in the what else? What does this go under? So this would be our maintenance and equipment. It increased equipment maintenance. So it's like halfway down the first page, kind of under operating expense.
Oh, I see.
Well, it looks like your
operating.
We have to start
budget,
numbering these.
But
pages.
You can see the prior year we only spent. I know. We'll make it better.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah.
Numbering the package, so that it's like over on page.
Yeah, that'll probably help you. Okay. But compared to 2021, you'll see that we're a little bit ahead. That's because we deferred a lot of maintenance. And, you know, realizing that it's important to maintain your assets as much as you can and, you know, take care of those things that need to be taken care of is really important. So we put a little bit more into that, which I think is really good. And another thing you will see is
we doubled the expenditures on maintenance. We went from 50,000 roughly to 100,000 roughly, and that gets back under budget.
You know, I am telling you, there.
But we budgeted because
we did.
Knew we
yeah,
had
the
been
positives.
We need we
sure.
knew we have to maintain
yeah.
the assets.
Yeah. yeah.
And you also see it in the capital expenditures. Because the year before, the capital was not, you know, we had a capital program that wasn't being spent
managed
enough. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the reasons why we go, it's just a lot of responsibility under one person. And then so we elevated Tori's role to be more maintenance and capital.
Yeah. yeah.
And actually kind of dedicate staff to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because
that's been great.
We can't go 2 years and have that happen, and it just so we're. But we haven't really suffered on the revenue line, which is, you know, which is good. But we are spending more money to maintain our assets, but that's better. You know, deferring maintenance usually is really a bad thing.
Yeah. It costs more in the end.
People usually only defer maintenance if you're in trouble from a cash flow standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it doesn't, you know, but we still got to build our net operating income. So if we're spending money, that hurts our NOI. But, you know.
Yeah, but I think this is a really good story to tell, honestly. Yeah. And to put it in perspective, so for 2021, we only spent $36,000 on capital or maintenance. And we kicked it up to $215,000, almost $216,000. So that's a lot of good work going on. And let me tell you, Tori finds the cheapest way to fix stuff in a good way. Not like my husband, but in a good way.
He does a lot of the work himself.
Yeah, he does. And he has good staff.
I think that's a really key thing. He have an Austin.
Somebody told me that the one of the pilings broke off.
Yeah, it's one of the pilings on B dock is pretty much shot, and it's hollowed out, and it was very squishy. So we'll have to replace that piling, and it's not an emergency or anything, but it's definitely gone. And I would suspect that almost most of the wood pilings are probably getting pretty tired. So that one was especially in bad shape, and we had a diver dive on it, and then I just saw the video of it today. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I just heard the comment about deferred maintenance and thought.
Yeah.
You're right. And yeah, part of that was the. Part of that was also like when we have these permits, you know, we can't let them lapse. We got to keep it going. Mm-hmm. And we have to have a. Once we get the nationwide, and we will go after programmatic permit because that just allows you to do work for the next 10 years and you plan it out.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah.
Save a lot of headache and time on that.
Yeah.
We can always declare an emergency, but I don't think unless there was a critical mass of wood pilings, commissioners, that we're worried about.
Right.
I don't think we'll do that. We'll I think we're okay so far. But we're doing an audit of all the pilings in throughout the marina.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just a couple more things to mention, fuel. So, the cost of fuel went up quite a bit, as you all know, which would, kind of, you know, put an impact on our margin. So the gross profit on unleaded fuel, decreased $11,000 from the prior year, while diesel increased almost $18,000. Which is good. So that's part of the fact that we did find that we were being charged sales tax on diesel.
Uh-huh.
And so the question was asked, well, we sell it and we charge them tax. So it was a miscommunication of we need a reseller's permit. And so Stacy got right on it and called Petro and DOR, and we are getting a check now back for $178,000.
Sweet, wow.
From 2018 forward. So
right, yeah.
It's kind of one of those low-hanging fruits that we could grab, and, you know, those, you know.
That
but
ain't
it was it
that's
was
great.
Something that's very easy to overlook.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even in my world, I never had to deal with a reseller's permit.
Is it based on, it's not highway...
We're a government agency, so paying excise tax and tracking that. Is, so you see, like, government vehicles say exempt on the license plate.
Right.
So it's kind of similar. You know, there's some things that we're exempt from, but if you don't file for it, it's the same as the tribal authorities. If they don't submit to us an exemption certificate, we can't legally exempt them from tax.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you have to help them.
We reach out
be
to them.
Sure that they do that.
Especially after this one.
Same as us, you know.
Yeah.
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 Which I'm a little surprised the Department of Revenue guy didn't.
He didn't look at that. He looked at leasehold.
He was only looking at leasehold. I'm surprised he didn't look at everything. A little bit, but. But,
yeah,
you know,
there's two different departments.
They are two different departments, but he's smart.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was funny because we had, I don't know if you remember, but we found something in the calculation prior to that, which we got back, I think, like $48,000.
Right,
but then it was like, As we talk about it more, we're looking at each other. It's like, I wonder why we, you know, that's like twice we're paying taxes. And so then the whole conversation came out, and DOR's like, oh, yeah. And Petro's like, sure, but we're not filing it. But we had everything ready, and so that we did confirm that it's coming in. So that's good, and that's something that, you know, is, like I said, easy to overlook.
And that goes to our cash reserves.
Yeah, right.
And we went, I think, went back to 2017.
18. Is as far as we could go.
2018, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew it was 5 years. Yeah.
Jeez,
yeah.
Liz, wow. Crazy.
So, but so, it was, that was really great. So
it was really great.
Yeah. and everything else is kind of. I don't think I'm going to go over all this. I have a lot of notes, but I went kind of crazy. But a couple things. So we are, and Chris is key on this, and so is Rose. Have been both working very hard on getting better reporting from Scribble, our Marina software, because I found it hard to kind of explain some of our revenue and, you know, increases and decreases without having the data to back it up. Like, what's our vacancy rate? You know, how many yacht clubs are coming? How many boats are staying? How many, you know, to have that data. Mm-hmm. And so what we are focusing on is finding a better way to use our existing software. What'd you do?
I've got ink all over my hand.
Our existing software, because that's always where you want to start, is what you have, and then make sure everything's cleaned up and everything's good there. And then if we need to get other software, we'll do that at that time. But I think that there's a lot that we could still be getting and have a true report of not only moorage, but parking and fuel and, you know, how many gallons do we sell? All those kind of things that really help you to know how our business is doing.
Yep.
So thank you, Chris, for leading that up. That's awesome. And I think that's all I'm going to torture you guys with tonight. I think I'm pretty good.
Shoot, really?
Very good, though. That was a lot of information.
I still have more, but that's okay.
Well, the audit, you only hear every other year, the audit report, so you're going to, that should be.
Yeah, and it was,
and
like
was
I said.
3 years. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but we have a lot of fun things coming to you guys. So looking ahead to 2023, I'm not really going to go over January's because it's 1 month, but with the line of business reporting and allowing you guys to really, you know, look at some of these reports in smaller bits so that it's not like so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Because I know how boring it is to listen to. I talk it all the time, but I understand. I see the eyes glaze over.
It's informative, but we...
Right. I know. And so what I'd like to do... What I'd like to do is, and I asked Greg if, like, maybe on your at your weekly sessions, maybe come and visit, like, for half an hour.
Totally.
And then I'm out. Yep. So you don't have to, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could choose a specific thing to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Something that is interesting you or something that we think, you know, is a good next step to educate you because... In a lot of organizations, not just with elected officials, but also with management, people don't always understand it, and that to me is, you know, I get why they wouldn't understand it, and some don't really are not interested in it. But to have, you know, the enough to allow you to make decisions you feel good about, and you'll find a lot of times that the data drives your decision. So it'll be a good conversation to have, good safe conversation to have, and I feel very confident with our numbers, and especially now that we've had an audit pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just that stamp of a
totally.
Well, we can't bond, we can't borrow, can't do anything without audit finance.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think it's so critical, and I think that we would have had findings if Audra and Stacy had not done work their magic.
Yeah.
And I really do. I know that you want to thank April Taylor, CPA, the state auditor.
Yeah.
She was a very, very great auditor.
Yeah.
She was super constructive, super positive, and great to work with.
Yeah.
Really the right attitude. She's also been around. So the complexities were not really complex. They're kind of still going to be complex to anybody, I think, sometimes, the nuance. But so now we're in a really good place where we have a great foundation. And then, you know, we want to make sure you guys have basic metrics and information that you can govern and give us direction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, we could just operate the business and keep maximizing, but it's really, what are we doing for the community? How is this going to turn into things that are beneficial?
What is the port really about? And and that's what the line of business too is. It has the quartiles where it'll show, okay, what's profitable, but then on the other axis, it's, you know, what's it doing for the community? So as a commission, you could all decide, okay, what's the weight of this activity? How much is it costing us? Is it worth the, you know, the benefit? Mm-hmm. So I think it'll open up some really good conversation. And, without it, it's very hard to govern some, you know, without those specific details, especially to know, okay, are we ready to grow? Are we ready to, you know, it tells a very solid story. So, really excited about it. And that's what 2023 will be. We'll kind of pick up the quarterly reports a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We'll add more graphics. We'll add, just kind of some fun to it. And then, like I said, we'll roll out a education kind of one-on-one type of financial thing. And I would love the feedback of you guys telling me what you want to see, what you want to hear. Or we could come to the table with something that's, you know, needed for that time or something. But it's something Stacy and I are both very passionate about, is teaching others how to utilize it. Mm-hmm. We've loved working with other managers and to help them, because it's, you know, knowledge is power. And in our game, this is, you know, a very, very big thing. Then you guys can make all the big decisions and I can sleep well. My job's easy.
So we'll move on to number 9, which is public comment. There is no public. So we'll go on to commission reports. Mary, would you like to start?
Sure. This week I went to, I made connection with James Davis from the Kitsap Economic Development Alliance and sat in on their small business training program. And had a really, really interesting conversation with him about starting a conversation about how we might partner with them, providing that kind of support for businesses in the North End. And more to follow, but I think there's something there when we talk about the economic development role. The percentage of small businesses that don't make it in the first 3 years is pretty staggering.
It is staggering.
And so anyway, that's a lot of my creative juices there right now. I also wanted to, as much a question as any kind of report, I'm very aware that stakeholders is anticipating a report next Friday, or is it this Friday?
Next Friday. March 3rd, next Friday,
concerning, you know, from the architect. And it looked from your comments, Greg, in your exchange with Nancy Langwith about that I wasn't quite sure when we were going to have an opportunity to hear enough, think about it, and before it gets brought out to the world.
I agree with that. I was trying to get a read. I talked to Sean Parker today, and we're meeting with Charlie and Sean Friday. And I haven't seen their work product, though we did get a bill.
So I said, I haven't seen it. We haven't even got to present it to the commission, just to, you know, the renderings and some of the concepts. So I said, you know, I always try to preface, you know, the expectations. I don't think I'm managing the expectations very well, I guess, in the public, because I'm an optimist too much. I overpromise and then we're not on time. But I think that we probably need more time than that. But they, Sean didn't give me a straight answer today. He goes, well, I want to talk to Charlie. You know, Charlie's been doing a lot of the work. Charlie's working on the restroom. And then we have another discussion with the county just about utilities on the site that is actually after the stakeholder meeting even. So these are kind of fundamental things that we don't have yet in play. So, you know, that's not to say, you know, it's to be honest, it's really your call until you get the information where you feel like it's okay to go out to the public.
Well,
I haven't presented the information with Charlie yet.
I sure want to see it before it goes out to the stakeholders.
Our friend, we're seeing it on Tuesday. Will Charlie and Sean be there on at our work session on Tuesday?
I would ask if they could be, but I haven't, you know, until I talk to Charlie, I don't know whether he's they're ready or not. And that's what the Friday meeting was. Hey, he said, I go, hey, I see the invoices, but I haven't seen the work. And we got to, I mean, I got to at least kind of get an idea, because I just got an invite today for the county to talk about infrastructure. How do you support that? So I personally would say, I don't like to say no, but I think it's still, it might be early, honestly, Mary, because you guys got to chew on it, too.
Maybe when we meet on Tuesday, we can identify if there's anything about what we've seen so far, that, and what we will have seen so far, that, in fact, we do feel comfortable saying, well, we're clear about this and this, but everything else is up in the air.
And honestly, we haven't. I haven't even presented, you know, the previous information that they that we already seen and the stakeholders have seen. I haven't even got together with some of the tribes and you know, with Suquamish or with Port Gamble yet. I meet Port Gamble with but mainly the environmental folks to see on permitting and there any concerns with the shoreline, if they have any issues. I feel like we should talk to them
first. We'll sure need to be really clear with stakeholders that this is early stages, haven't done the due diligence and connecting with the tribes, you know, all of the other.
Just to keep them updated.
I would keep them totally updated about, you know, that we're just in the process and, you know, got to update the commission, have to talk to the tribes. We're not ready to actually do a, because then it gets out there and it's not exactly what we want to get out there.
I would
well, it's
agree.
Okay.
Is that okay? I also feel like, you know, should we, that, I feel like we're pushing it for that component of the outreach, given that I haven't even seen anything,
there's no question. If they hadn't been expecting it in December and January and February, I would feel real comfortable saying, "Hey, wait." But
One thing that might help the discussion with them is that the because of the grant and the restrooms, and the fact that we had to change. The way that we were going to fund the restrooms, and that because of the Kingston design standards, that kind of upset the apple cart, And so that's helpful to describe that, because we have a grant expectation and we have to, you know, build the thing so we can get compensated. So we have a kind of it's kind of a fiduciary responsibility, you know, on that end, and that may help the discussion. I don't know.
The other thing that I don't know if it's, I doubt that it's appropriate to bring it up to the stakeholders on the 3rd, but I think I've mentioned a couple of times, and I just want to throw it out there again, that with the economy on the verge of tanking, according to all of the investment advisors that I'm aware of, I really think we need to think about a phasing of improvements and construction, you know, the Plan B concept, and because I don't think this is going to be a smooth time the next few years.
But. Yeah, I've always thought that phased approach is good, too, for something like that, but doing something. So how do you guys get, who's your stakeholders and how do you communicate with them?
There's a group called the stakeholders. So they call themselves the stakeholders. Well, that makes it easy. I thought it was just people in the community. In a general way. Well, that would be nice.
Yeah.
And at some level, it would almost be concurrent. It should be with the stakeholder group.
It would be nice to have as stakeholders out there.
One group, for instance. Because,
But it could end up being that we have to phase it. We have to go through. There's so much work to even know, like, you know, how what the cost would be even currently. So we have a chief estimator on contract.
Yeah.
And one of the key things is, well, how is it? The infrastructure even going to be, what do we have in place?
Yeah.
We're going to put everything into a CAD drawing and engineer drawings in CAD, and we're migrating and putting it together right now. And then we're meeting with the county to go over, okay, what do we have or don't we have in order to be able to develop, period? Because that's a big lift. So, I don't think, and also you guys have to have the information first to, if you have something where you, oh, hey, this is, I'm really concerned about this when you get it from the architects, then they would have to go back and roll that in.
That's always my thing
is I don't want to get out in front of you. You guys have to actually give us direction and make sure you're comfortable with it. If you're not comfortable with it, we can't go to the public with it, that's for sure.
Aren't the stakeholders expecting a presentation of what we're thinking we're going to do? And I don't think we're at that point yet because...
We haven't seen it.
Tribes haven't blessed it in any way, shape, or form yet. And so it's kind of like putting the cart before the apples to actually put it out to the public. At least that's how I feel.
I agree with you totally, Laura.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about this.
Maybe the stakeholders got that idea because for a while we were kind of on a roll.
Well, I think we pulled back, and they may not know if we're gonna table it.
We should do it this week
so
that they can hunt and figure out what else they're going to do with their meeting.
So Greg should probably compile an email.
Yes. Is it possible to wait until Friday after you've met with the architects?
No, because we still haven't and the tribe hasn't. So it doesn't make a difference. There's no way. We need to send an email first thing tomorrow morning.
I'll just say, hey, we're not going to be ready for this upcoming meeting.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing that happened is, I mean, not that we're making excuses, but that the principal of the architectural firm had COVID, I think, pretty badly. And so he was gone for like a month, you know, not even.
Yeah, it was more than a month, I think.
Yeah.
He was sick, and then we had to get the restroom. We have to get the restroom going.
Yep.
So you might want to.
So I'll preface that in there just to give him an idea about what we. It's not like nothing's happening, but we also have
delays.
Yeah.
Is that the stakeholder's
I think communication is the key.
Well, communication is because otherwise they will fill in the blanks.
I think it's important
to let them know where we're at.
A presentation to them is going to be a very important thing at the point upcoming.
And they appreciate that constant feedback.
Yeah. Whether you have anything to report or not, it's key to just say, we have nothing at this
time. We're working on it.
This is what I'm at.
There's just...
Well, and we had also, in the other community groups and things like that, had said, you know, when we have something we'd like to bring it to, you know, the... Environment and Land Use Subcommittee of KCAC, and
we'll let you know when.
And other elements, you know, based on that too,
and
how certain components might be rolled into the Kingston sub-area plan too. Mm-hmm. The idea.
Yeah, you're looking at it more holistic.
In a holistic way.
Yeah. And not only that, but you're really thinking it through. And certain decisions need to be thought through very well and then executed, right?
Yeah.
And I think what they're worried about is the non-execution, because that's what they've seen over past years. But that's not this commission. Yeah. It's not us.
Yeah.
And I think just getting that information to say, we're working on it, we want it done right. And that shows a lot of respect, you know, that you guys are making sure it's done correctly. You too there, pal.
Okay.
You have to be more patient, but I'll send them an email to that effect and also why, you know, what we have been working on. And it's all good.
It all plays together.
Mary, do you have more for your update?
Pardon?
Do you have more for your commissioner report?
No. No. No.
Okay. Steve?
Okay. I primarily this month have been working on several meetings in relation to the Kingston Sub-Area Plan. So in the Parks, Trails, and Open Space group, I've had a meeting this month. Also in relation to the Sound to Olympic Trail, that group, there's been an awful lot of work in that avenue as well. And then the transportation subcommittee, there's been some meetings that I've been involved in for that. And also the land use and environment subcommittee of KCAC. And then on top of that, meeting
a little busy
at KCAC itself. So
I really wish you would do something.
So exactly. Lots and lots of meetings. But lots of really good input too, I think. One of the things that I think was recently discussed was again this idea of the you know, the ticketing system for holding traffic back and things like that. And it was really funny because I don't know what day was it. Oh, on Monday, on President's Day, Sally and I went to do a staging on Weepy Island. And we were able to get a reservation to wait in a line at Fort Townsend. And then from the other end of the work that we had done, once we got done with Weepy Island staging, we also had a subsequent appointment to wait in the line at the other end at Keystone. And it just, the whole system was so great. I kept thinking, why aren't we doing that or trying to do that here? And now thinking that, I've just made some comments today with that transportation subcommittee that, you know, because that project doesn't seem to be moving forward or that it's been delayed again, you know, they were talking about, you know, the revision to the, how people are going to, you know, go to the ferry and come off the ferry and that whole concept and
ticket booths moving
and moving the ticket booths and all, and thinking maybe that should be looked at again. Because the idea that had been rattled around 2 or 3 years ago, but was kind of poo-pooed by the county, the fact that it made so much sense to use the whole entire DOT parking lot, and all you'd have to do would be to buy out two more houses, and then you'd have that whole width of that parking lot and area that you could then move the ongoing and outcoming lanes clear over to the side. And that on this other end would be adjacent to town, and you could have your holding lanes there for a reservation system. And so you could develop a reservation system that helps the Kingston businesses and still provides that continuity to ticketing, et cetera, and so forth. So, you know, people would be able to get in that line and have their appointment and stage, and, you know, you're and move the boot, maybe move the booths back as well, you know. So this whole idea.
Oh, so you're saying maybe not move them over like they decided, but to
move them out into town more, you know, because Port Townsend's set up that way. Mm-hmm. It's set up right off a road. You know, you go off the road and on you go on the ferry, or you sit there and wait.
Yeah.
It's like, but I've got an appointment for the 4:30 boat, and you get there at 3, so you can go to lunch, or you can do some shopping or things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, people plan ahead for that now.
And you plan ahead.
My daughter
ahead.
Does.
You plan
I'll
ahead.
I'll do my homework while I'm waiting.
And so
for
we
the
have the ability maybe to rethink some of this stuff. And I thought, you know what? Why don't we put that in the transportation sub area plan as a concept? Why not? So anyway.
But could we still have the traffic back a little bit, not right on
and
the street?
But I think it's still important.
Yeah.
To have the ATMS system. Because when the traffic's so, you know, humongous in the
right.
summer, that you still want to be able to,
I think so too.
You know,
people love
get people
breezy
locked in, and then at that point, you can show, you can scan your reservation, mm-hmm. and that puts you in whatever lane.
Right. Yeah, I think that's great.
Yep.
Interesting to hear what DOT has to say about why Kingston isn't on the reservation. List.
Yeah.
Because we're not, and haven't been for a long time.
Yeah.
And I don't know what their criteria was.
Right.
We should explore that with them.
Well, maybe that was part of the argument was, well, where are you going to hold people?
Yeah, I don't think
like,
we got it
out. Or the idea, do you use lanes internally, and then outside you have some additional waiting? You know, that may be a thought, too. I don't know, but...
Yeah.
It at least could be looked at a little further.
And it's unfortunate, I think, that the holding lane concept, which got funded and so on and so forth, before the ATMS project got thought of at all.
Yep.
And so that was held sacrosanct. We're not changing that. We'll just do the ATMS over it. And there was a lot of local support from some pretty key people to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it needs to be re-looked at.
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't put everything off another 5 years.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Because this to me is pretty simple.
Yeah.
You
it's
know.
One of the busiest runs, isn't it?
Second busiest run,
but
based on transportation, it's the busiest.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard there was at least, I think there were two reasons why they said they hadn't addressed the reservation system with Kingston. One of them was that their system wasn't capable of handling the Kingston reservations at this time because of how many there would be. And I'm trying to remember what the second reason was, because I know that Beth Brewster has talked about this a lot.
A lot. Yeah.
But I know there was a second reason that they said, but I don't know. I personally don't know how valid those reasons are that they were. And I'm sorry, I can't remember what the second reason was. But the first one was that their system couldn't handle it.
How long has the reservation system been in place for the other ferry systems?
So they have reservations at Anacortes,
Port
Townsend, and the Port Townsend run.
They're all smaller
and
runs.
And the Anacortes runs to the San Juans.
Yeah.
I think it's set up that way too. But it's limited. So they have a limited number, but the whole point of reservations. I've got 20 spots. So first come, first serve, there's your 20 spots.
Yeah.
And they ding you if you don't show up. Or if you show up early, they still charge you for the reservation.
Yeah.
So, if they show up early and there's room, then they get you on a boat before, but they still...
You're still paying.
You know,
well,
they're still paying
the
for the reservation to happen.
Mary said something.
Yeah.
Did you say something, Mary?
She needs to sign off at 8 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so, I talk too much. Sorry.
Let's go on. go on to my report. I don't really have a lot. I was at the chamber after hours, but I've been recovering from crud, not COVID, crud. So, but I appreciate that you guys have been going to all the meetings. I think that's fabulous. So we will move on to to staff reports. Chris?
Oh gosh.
And I will sign off.
Bye, Mary.
Good to see you, Mary.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll get those graphs to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
You bet. We've been working on the handbook. Reaching out to Scribble, like Audra referenced earlier, trying to figure out some better reporting and how we can utilize the tools that we do have. Nothing else crazy coming up. Tori and I are going to be attending a business continuity conference in March, the 7th over in Seattle. We're potentially going to be looking at taking some tours of some of the other ports and checking out their operations.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing, you know, the systems that they use and how we can, if some of what they're doing would work for us. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably take a little field trip soon.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Let me know when you go to Edmonds or Anacortes. Or...
I think the plan is to go across and then south. So. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Other than that, just regular day-to-day stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I already talked enough.
Great.
So speaking of the state fairies, so I did reach out to them just to look at so we submitted a letter to the state legislature. Mm-hmm. We had five different items on, including SR local realignment, which in the county's legislature, they were combined with ATMS and the Fairy Holding Lot planning projects.
Yeah.
They rolled it all into one request of $23 million.
Yeah.
So we did the same to align with them, and then we talked about electrification and seismic data,
alerting system.
Making sure that the terminal is ready for a seismic event.
Oh, I see.
So
yeah, right.
I reached out to the state fairy staff. I talked to the engineers that actually are the structural engineers that are handling this. They are actually in the process of improving slip one. The terminal actually is pretty resistant to earthquake proof, but they're improving slip one, then they'll hopefully move on to slip two. So we did, we told them, hey, we would be submitting for, it is funded for the most part, but they said it doesn't hurt to have more money coming in that we could use to upgrade the terminal. So it was interesting because I have a little bit more of an open dialogue through them, even though it all goes to David Sauer. David, he covers all the terminals, and so
right.
He gets kind of buried when you ask him for stuff, even though he's very responsive. It's nice just to be able to reach out to them, and I just be sure that I'm not going past David, and he knows what we're doing. So the state fairies, that's really good. So we'll try to get more. I'm going to try to get more updates to know what they're really working on the terminal. But they've been great. Leonard's been great. All of them. John Bazina has been very good to work with. Mm-hmm. But then we're working on the comp plan, obviously, just like you and many people here. So the comp plan, that's got to be, hopefully it's going to be submitted here by March 1st or March 25th or March 15th, whatever our comments are, at least for the economic development, transportation, and potentially land use.
Did you see the email today? It's due by Sunday.
Well, when we've talked to Eric, and he said basically you got even more time than that potentially. They want the comments, but I think they're going to have a long process that goes through this. But he's trying to get, I think there's the KCAC comments, and they're supposed to collate a bunch of it. Our comments don't exactly align with KCAC. I think the thing is they're really focused on residential development. Currently, throughout the whole downtown area, you can build everything to residential, and it doesn't require mixed use, so there's not a commercial component that's required.
But commercial zoned or urban village center, whatever that zone might be,
mm-hmm. it could all be about residential.
Yeah.
It could be all housing.
Because of the use table, not so much even about
well,
the
code. Even if you have retail below and
but it's not required. So the developer doesn't need to, and they make more money on residential than you do on commercial.
That's the thing, is that then you have these wonderful little areas where people could tourism and everything.
Totally.
It's gone.
That's why we're encouraging them to do residential on the. To do commercial on the lower level.
Yeah.
And incent them. So
what we've described it as storefront.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Storefront.
That's
storefront
what people need because everybody else is going out of business.
Their pictures show that.
Yeah.
But that's not the verbiage that we hear.
Right.
So that so I think that's the kind of the big push is to get that comp plan submitted. Also spoke with we have this grant for the floats for guest moorage, and so we reached out to get all the permitting in line. So we talked to Washington Park Fish and Wildlife. We had a great discussion with them. We reached out to Army Corps of Engineers. Really good discussion with them, and we're going to have. The person that we contacted from staff at Army Corps sit in on the meeting with NIMS as well. And we're going to talk to them. And then Friday, we're meeting with Fort Campbell Skull Tribe. And I've got to connect up with Squamish.
Yeah.
And then kind of those discussions are also really across the board updates for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then just start creating this dialogue. Yeah. And so we have a point of contact where they have some bandwidth to be able to have those discussions. And then maybe, hopefully, they become our point of contact where they can run the gauntlet internally and make sure people are informed.
Yeah, it's interesting that at KCAC, we've always had a placeholder for both the Squamish and the Tsklallam tribe. And a Tsklallam tribe representative came to that meeting and hadn't been for literally years.
Wow.
So that I found that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. So I think those are some of the some of the most important things. So we had basically as far as a follow up on the compliance. Oh, the chamber's doing super well. Things are just cooking along as far as the chamber's going. I think we've attended a couple of after hours, as well as also the luncheon. I know Chris and Tori are going to go to the next luncheon.
Through tomorrow, is that right?
No, March 2nd.
It's the next week, but it's a week.
Next Thursday.
A week from tomorrow. Audra and I attended the last luncheon, and which was really great. It was a great discussion. We actually were kind of covered, I think, for most of the topics that it was HR specialists that brought up compliance with the new laws, which we just got done going over.
And yeah, I go, that's why I asked for that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So we're totally in line with them, so that's good.
Yeah.
So we're just going to keep going on that. The compliance on, so the registration for vessel registration, we're all but one for that. The insurance, I think we only have a couple. And then on the vessel registration, the problem is getting the hard copy. They actually have the stickers on the boats, but it's getting the hard copy of the registration in case somebody were to steal a sticker and stick it on their boat, which not very likely, but
be hard to peel.
So insurance registration and then seaworthiness, I think we're going to have to look at that a little bit more closely on buoy testing them and making sure that people are using their vessels. But basically, they've been really diligent on doing that. They're doing the update on the rate analysis right now, too, for because they should have all of last year's data now is available, so they're working on that. We have 40 yacht clubs that are booked currently, which is great. I mean, I think it was a few years ago, we only had 22 for the year that we had come in, and we have another 10 to 15 that we're hoping to get in. I was talking to Ray about that. So great job there.
Wow.
And they're excited. Edmonds Yacht Club is coming in. They're super excited. We also joined the Recreational Boaters Association of Washington, RBAW, Arbaugh. They were really successful in being able to purchase the Lake Bay Marina. And now they're submitted for the RCO grants. I did the RCO Boating Facilities Program review for the 27 projects. So that
projects,
we had a couple of days of reviewing that. The results, I just got an email about the results, are online now to see where they came in at. But that's a lot of work, but it's really well worth it. And I saw the Lake Bay Marina, they were one of them that applied. I was a little surprised there weren't more projects from ports.
Yeah.
So that's something I think that we need to work on because they ports certainly, they all have need. of these projects. And so half the money kind of goes to the state. They keep half the money, and half the money goes to other projects unless they don't apply for it.
Right.
Interesting.
And you'll see, like, a lot of municipalities, which I was surprised at, also applying, like the city of Seattle, or municipalities where I would have thought they have the taxation to be able to support these facilities. But still, hey, you know, money's money. City of Mercer Island, city of Des Moines. So I was surprised how many applications came from there. So it was kind of eye-opening for me to actually participate.
You would think they'd be pretty flush as well. Yeah.
So they asked for the full over $2 million. I mean, they would ask for the full all the money just from our seal to fund their project.
Wow.
So anyway, it's very interesting. I don't know. I'm going to try to keep doing it, but it is a lot of work. Actually, you got to read 27 projects, go over. Applications, but it's just really good, and I think the port. Because I'm going to work with the Marina Committee to try to get that, make sure that there's an awareness, there's more effort putting in from there. So the BFP is for under 26 foot trailer basketball boats.
Yes, right.
So you see a lot of boat launch projects, for example, but also marina projects.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was that's a big part of the effort. Also. I was going to say there's Sail Kingston Cove. We're looking at, you know, we've got something in place that was a continuation of the previous agreement. Yeah. They want a little different agreement. And so the discussion has been, do we want to grant exclusive use? And I think overall the commission direction is that that's not necessarily that we want exclusive use, because we've got other user types that might want to use that, some of those facilities, or share them if possible.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to look at that.
Yeah.
So we just got an inquiry for a paddleboarding operation. For
example. Yeah, and I forwarded you, I kind of did an introduction to you and included you as well, just because I thought it made sense.
And the other thing, I talked to the, I sat in on the board meeting for Enduris via Zoom, and it was, informative, but it was alarming that the reinsurance market is so destabilized globally, and that they expect rates, because of the amount of claims, that they expect rates to go up at least probably 30% this coming, the next go around when they adjust rates for everybody. So it's good to know. But Ray and Tori, Joe and Austin and Marvin and, you know, Rose and Ashley, I mean, everybody is doing they're doing a really good job, and they're hitting on all cylinders. And it's kind of a little bit of a slower time for us. We've had some weird weather, like right now. Mm-hmm. So I think they're catching up on, but I think they really are dialing it in. And Rose just got done working on Kitsap Towing to get a contract in place with those guys to be sure that it's enforceable if they do have a problem.
Oh, right.
But it took a while, and Chris was working on it too.
New signs are coming.
Yeah. There's definitely a problem.
And so just to navigate
it. Tightening up that process a lot.
I saw her give someone a ticket in the 2 hour that was there all, car was there all day.
I see them do that. I see them come in the morning when I drop the ferry off, and they're parking their car and they're heading for the ferry.
Yep, I see it too. Or you see Rose.
What about, you know, and I know it's kind of a controversial thing, but what about the people that come and take the handicap spot all day long?
So those are pretty closely monitored by the staff, and so they do look at it. And so there are instances where that, you know, they can do that if they, you know, they have a disabled sticker on the truck.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to verify, because I know they're going to commute with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always the enforcement of our people using those things. Mm-hmm.
Good deal.
Anyway. I had friends that were going to the loft with me, and they parked in the handicapped spot, and I said, "Oh, what's the deal? You guys aren't handicapped." And Fred goes, "Oh, I have an old placard from." I go, "No. That's not right. You can't do that.
That's called a mental handicap."
Yes. So I made him.
You don't get stickers.
Good
for
you. No, you don't.
Yeah.
Well, I would say, like, you know, our parking revenues definitely keeps increasing and strengthening, and Kitsap Transit. Things are changing also because of the employers in Seattle are requiring people to come to the office at least
more
3 days a week to use the walk now. So I think our parking revenue will increase steadily, and the parking demand, it'll be something we have to look at. One thing with the comp plan, the two alternatives, I would encourage anybody, if they listen into this, I hope that they go into the comp plan on the county. They have a great website.
Yeah.
It's extremely robust. Look at the Kingston sub-area plan. Look at the alternatives. And put and submit their comments to us in the email
or
call. There's a link on the website.
But the both alternatives, all three alternatives, well, the first alternative is do nothing.
Yeah.
Status quo. The two alternatives to make any changes include rezoning the Toth and Hill property that we call the Toth and Hill from residential to urban village center.
Yeah.
So that's a good
Well, I think, I think though, actually, though, as I understand, the site-specific ones like Hill and Toth are kind of standalone. They're gonna be reviewed for their adequacy of how it fits in with the plan. So they're kind of going their own merit.
I think
even if they said status quo, that they would still look at the site specifics.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But in the two alternatives, they actually have a zoned ABC. It's colored yellow.
Yeah, yeah.
So they are obviously, I think, moving that direction.
They're moving that direction, yeah, which is great. Mm-hmm. Really, really good.
So do you guys have a pretty good feeling about all this passing and being able to build? And
I feel confident.
I'm still
about it,
tentative,
sure, you know,
because I think it's a slow process, and I think that a lot of people get frustrated with the slowness of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've kind of accepted that, and like at the after hours that we went to, mm-hmm. I'm realizing that when people find out what I do and who I am, and they start asking questions, I only talk to the point until their eyes start glazing over. And then I change the subject because
there's a lot to each of it.
Yeah, I've gotten into I've said too much.
Yeah, like me know? Today.
Yeah, and it's okay.
It's okay.
It's because, you know, because it's not something that's for, this isn't mm-hmm. something people normally do or mm-hmm. normally are a part of. And there's so much to it that people don't really think about. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of information to give to somebody. So then I try to change the subject a little bit.
Yeah.
I'd say the difference between where we're at even today with our efforts on looking at commercial development on mm-hmm. property, Portland property, within the Tent Pad area, that area specifically, we're already further than they've ever gone.
I agree with that.
Yes. Well,
substantially, because you... due case, diligence. And
case in point, they had no idea about zoning in the past. It's like, hang on.
Yeah, the zoning, you know, which is
your
bad.
Zoning wouldn't have even allowed what they had drawn up in the with the big brick fireplace thing and all that.
But you look at the design, you look at zoning, you look at actually the overall site plan, you look at merging in and actually have engineered drawings, you look at a meeting with the county. This would be, I think, our third meeting with the county now. Where we're going to go over infrastructure capacity. Mm-hmm. These things, even whether you execute on it in the immediate future or down the line, you have to do all this due diligence.
Yep.
And it doesn't go away. That work is still valid and valuable going forward.
Yep. Yeah.
And first of all, we make sure it's in our comp plan.
Correct, which we adjusted.
Yes, it did.
So all of these things.
Yeah, that's really important.
That was our first step.
It's important as well to... in relation to future county permits too, because if there's any shoreline action that's outside of the realm of what is dialed in, for instance, the 35-foot building height and things like that.
Sure.
Because the height restriction in the shoreline code, you know, and it was also important for the kayak shed over the overwater kayak shed that we had that in there, because otherwise it's too tall of a structure and it ends up being a view line thing.
Yeah.
Well, so and then all sorts of stuff.
And additionally, you know, concurrently, you also have to have your financials in place to be able to execute on anything.
And that's what we
couldn't do without Stacy and Audra's work. And that and also working with the state auditor work through everything. So I think going to the state auditor's office is not going to look at us with a jaundiced eye.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And they know that this is really a rock solid group and team.
Yeah.
So, but you have to have that for us to be able to entertain alternatives. Mm-hmm. Now we have to look at what's the timing and looking at the design
right.
and the renderings, and is it what you guys are envisioning? Mm-hmm. And then we can look at the phasing.
And how do we fund it?
And how do we fund
it? I mean, there's all these different pieces. I'm encouraged by what we're doing, very encouraged by what we're doing. But I see that there's lots of steps, but they all have to be, you have to take these steps.
Yeah.
And we're in the very beginning of these steps.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that, because I was hoping it wasn't, people weren't getting, or you guys weren't getting tired of, the comp plan, the this, the that. Because I know the toll it can take, you know, going through all this red tape and trying to get all this happening. But the good news is, I think the group that we have now, including the commissioners, is we want to build something that will be there for our grandkids and our, you know, where past people pretty much wrote out what they could and moved on. It's happened in a lot of organizations, sports, across, you know.
Yep.
And I think that we have something special, and we're doing it for the right reasons, and that...
Mm-hmm.
That feels good.
Yeah, for the future generations. Yeah. I think that's always a good story.
Yeah, it is.
So that being said.
Yeah.
Laura's been yawning for.
No, I just thought that was a good segue. I was thinking, wow, is she saying that? I'm going, boy.
I know, and you got to watch
right into
sometimes.
What I'm going to say now.
I know, let's burn.
So our next regular meeting is Wednesday, March 22nd at 1 p.m. It'll be a hybrid meeting here at the Village Green Center, or you can come in via Zoom.
Yay.
And so with that being said, I will ask for a motion to adjourn at 8:20.
And I make a motion to adjourn.
And I will second that motion.
Awesome.
And all in favor.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.
Steve, I'm writing a meeting.